Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program Today's Issues. Pardon me. Here on American Family Radio, as always, we thank you for listening to AFR. The co-hosts today include Ray Pritchard in Kansas City. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing today?
Doing well. Yourself?
You know, it's a beautiful day here in the Midwest. It's sunny and going to be in the 70s, and I have no complaints, none whatsoever.
It's almost summertime there. Well, the Royals are playing, right? So,
yeah, we don't talk about that. They're off to a rough start once again, you know.
Yeah. As a St. Louis Cardinals fan, I appreciate that. both Missouri teams are kind of letting us down right now.
A little rough, right?
Ed Battagliano, good morning, Ed.
Good morning. And since Ray Pritchard is going to be kind of sunny disposition,
yeah.
I was encouraging Ed yesterday. I'm going opposite. It's opposite day. I'm discouraging
Ed.
It's a lousy day.
You were encouraging Ed yesterday. You're discouraging Ed today.
Discouraging.
Yeah.
Ed.
So, you know, that's bipolar. You know that, right?
Okay. It could be, but yeah. That's not the only thing that's wrong with my life.
You know, Tim. Al Gore said the bipolar is going to melt.
I saw that movie. We watch that movie every Christmas, The Bipolar Express.
Chris Woodward, good morning, Chris.
Good morning, and go Braves.
Are they doing good so far?
They're doing well. They've lost a few here recently, but they have the best record in the National League.
Wow. Okay.
Take that, Dodgers.
Yes. The Dodgers are, well, we won't start with them now. But
yeah. All right. A lot to talk about today. Jen Ellis will be with us momentarily. Dr. Frank Turek will be with us at the bottom of the hour, so a lot to talk about. We thank you for listening. If you want to join us on the Internet, go to AFR.net. You can listen live there, AFR.net. You can also access the live video stream of this show at Facebook Live. Facebook Live, just type in Today's Issues, or you can use our own streaming service, streaming.afa.net. That's a live video stream of most all the shows that we do here on AFR. Streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. Where are you in the Bible reading, Ray?
Hey, we're in the story of Elijah, the great prophet. And yesterday we were with Elijah up on Mount Carmel, and he was facing off against the prophets of Baal. He won that, by the way. That's 1 Kings chapter 18. And today we're in 1 Kings 19 through 22. This is, you know, the day after the big victory. He runs under a broom tree and sits down and says, I wish I was dead. My life is worthless. And then ends up hiding in a cave on Mount Horeb, which is Mount Sinai. So it's a great victory followed by a great personal crisis. So Elijah, join us. I am reading through the Bible online out loud every day this year. We post a new video every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time, and you can find it, easy to find it. It's free, keepbelieving.com. And just every morning, the video pops up right there on the front page. Just check us out at keepbelieving.com.
And this is your 5 months in, so you have not missed. You haven't missed any.
Not missed a day yet. But you know, 5 months in, we're not yet halfway, Ed. So, that mountain is still pretty big in front of us.
That's right. As discouraging Ed would say, there's still plenty of time for something to go wrong. Ray.
Well, we still got First Chronicles in front of us. 9 solid chapters of unpronounceable names.
Oh my goodness! That's right, and that's so. What are you going to do? Just mumble your way through that?
You know, I've told people on these videos, I have a philosophy. When you come to these names, read them loud, read them fast, and keep on moving because they're all dead.
Right. So. Yeah, and most people won't know the difference.
That's right. Huh? That's
right. That's exactly right. You just do the best you can and keep going.
That's not in the original Hebrew.
I tell you, Malachi is my favorite of the prophets.
That's right.
That's right. The one Italian prophet, the prophet Malachi. We got one in there.
I thought he painted the Sistine Chapel. Is that not true?
He owns the pizzeria down on 8th Street.
Okay.
Get that pretzel crust.
All right. So, Jenna is at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Orlando. And, of course, Jenna is host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, heard on American Family Radio from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time each weekday morning. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning, and it's great to be with you and coming from the free state of Florida, so it's a great gathering here.
Hey, how many times have you been to the NRB?
A few. I mean, it's been when I was working for Trump, I didn't really have time, but before that, I was here a couple of times, and so it's great to be back, and first time with AFR, so that's great.
Okay, so speaking of Governor Trump, Governor Trump, how you like that one? That's a Freudian slip.
Well, you know, maybe instead of running independent, he'll
he's the governor of Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah,
there you go.
Can't deny that. Governor DeSantis, Florida. He three things. One is he's supposed to announce he's going to run for president sometime this week. That's what the anticipation is. Secondly, you interviewed him yesterday on American Family Radio live. Thirdly, he spoke last night at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, where you are in Orlando. So any one of those three things, jump in there and tell us what your thoughts are. But first of all, how did you get the interview?
Yeah, well, thank you. Actually, his former press secretary and current press secretary are friends of mine, and so I've been kind of dogging them a little bit to get that. And I've told them, you know, President Trump has been on with me and Vivek Ramaswamy, and so, you know, we really need to get Governor DeSantis to kind of balance this out. And so then when I saw that he was speaking at the NRB convention, and of course, this is all about religious liberty and freedom of speech, then I reached back out to them and said, hey, this would be the perfect opportunity to preview his speech. And of course, everybody knows this is the week that he is planning to announce. And so they arranged that for me. And it was really great to actually focus on more of the religious freedom with the governor and to ask him about his personal faith and his commitment to religious freedom and how that has been evidenced through all of the legislation that he has championed and signed in Florida. So I thought it was a really great interview, and he was very unabashedly Christian and came from the perspective that, of course, is correct, that it is God that endows us with our rights, not government.
Jenna, do you have plans to have, I mean, because the GOP field appears to be growing.
I'm going to announce.
You're going to announce?
Yeah, next week. But when I get back from
I'll have you on my show, Tim. Well, I'll issue you an invitation as soon as you
announce. Well, if you get with my people, we'll see whether we can get
send me their contacts. I'm not connected at all.
Well, you can't run for president if you don't have people.
Right.
You're going to have to have
will
people.
Will you be on my people team?
I'll be on their people team, okay. Absolutely.
I just figured we got 27 people that have announced, so why not throw my hat in the ring?
Yeah, so, and
Tim, need my hat back, though.
Tim wants to throw his hat in the ring because he wants to be able to say, right, after he gets humiliated running for president, that he's a former presidential candidate.
So that's 100%. That's like the only reason that some people are running is to be able to have that title of former presidential candidate. And not to put these two ideas together, but Larry Elder, who has also announced and who will have that title of former presidential candidate when the nomination is complete, he just wrote a book and will join me on radio either this week or next. So looking forward to having
you. Are planning to, as the field widens, you are planning to have as many come on as will be on, right?
Absolutely, and multiple times. And I mean, I would love to have former Vice President Mike Pence on. And in fact, We have even issued an invitation to Karine Jean-Pierre, the Biden's press secretary, because he's running now, and saying, you know, we'd love to have him. He might need a teleprompter. I'm not sure if we can provide one. I don't know. And so if they accept the invitation, that is actually genuinely an interview I would love to do. But yeah, I think that our AFR audience needs to hear from everyone running, as many people as will join me, and hopefully President Trump and Governor DeSantis will come back frequently. And I think it's really important to hear from everyone who will join.
I think RFK Jr. would be a very interesting interview.
We are working on that.
Oh, that
so
would be...
stay tuned for that one.
Yeah.
All right, Ray, you got a question for Jenna?
Jenna, one of the things that people are talking about is Mr. Trump's seeming preoccupation with Governor DeSantis and the names he uses to sanctimonious and all of that. My question is this. Is this out of personal animus, or do Trump and his people really think that attacking DeSantis and even in some cases his wife, do they really think that's going to help them win the nomination?
You know, that's kind of what has become, frankly, the $15.3 million question currently, which is the amount that the Trump campaign, as of today, has spent on attack ads against Governor DeSantis, which is more than they're actually spending attacking Joe Biden and his policies. So they seem to be putting their money where Trump's mouth is, and I don't particularly think that that's going to be effective. But, you know, Trump is playing the same game that he played in 2016, which was effective. But I think the difference is this. He was attacking genuinely establishment candidates, people like Ted Cruz, people like Marco Rubio. And even though the name calling people, you know, like me said then was childish, he was calling out a broader problem. And the issue for Trump is that line of attack and that same play is not going to work with Ron DeSantis, because Trump is actually to the left of Governor DeSantis, at least currently, in some of the policies that he's championing and some of the positions like on abortion. So I don't think it's going to be as effective. And I really think that that President Trump should tailor his message to his significant wins over the course of his first 4 years. I think the judicial nominations across the federal bench, including the Supreme Court, are things that are probably the best win that he had. I was very proud to work for him and to champion those efforts. And I just really don't think that the line of attacks are going to work with Governor DeSantis. And I'd love to see him change that direction and to say, you know what, let's actually have a fair fight and see who can be the champion of conservative policy the most, and do it in a gentlemanly way. But honestly, I just don't think that is the personality of Donald Trump.
All right. Let's get your comments on the COVID comment, the COVID comments from the Supreme Court, in particular,
Neil Gorsuch.
In particular, Justice Neil Gorsuch. There was a what do you call it? An opinion, which was announced a couple of days ago.
Right.
Chris, do you have information on that? And then Jenna can comment.
Yes, I do. I can set this up. In a statement written as part of a Supreme Court case about Title 42, Justice Gorsuch said things like the lockdowns were the greatest intrusions on civil liberties. He said leaders at state and federal levels issued emergency decrees on a breathtaking scale. These are actual phrases from Justice Gorsuch. He also said that Congress and state legislatures too often fell silent as strict rules were laid down. It's interesting that we're talking to Jenna about this, because I actually know Jenna from several years ago when she was representing Pastor John MacArthur out in California. Pastor MacArthur, of course, was fighting the COVID lockdowns there. So what do you, Jenna, being an attorney, think about all this that I've mentioned?
I think it's absolutely fantastic. And the only change that I would make is that I wish that Justice Gorsuch had said this sooner. And I wish that the Supreme Court had come out more strongly in 2020, specifically for religious freedom and specifically against this whole notion that these petty tyrants that are harnessing emergency powers actually are doing so constitutionally and through correct process. And one of the other things that Justice Gorsuch, by the way, a Trump appointee yet again, mm-hmm. right? So this is where Trump should be touting this right. instead of other things. But Justice Gorsuch also said, one lesson might be this: fear and the desire for safety are powerful forces. They can lead to a clamor for action, almost any action, as long as someone does something to address a perceived threat. So I hope that the context here and the greater overall lesson that we will all learn, and particularly state legislatures, is to review their Emergency Powers Acts. And like, for example, Chris, you were mentioning in the state of California, one of the things that I learned through the course of representing Pastor MacArthur is that the emergency powers, in order for those to cease once a governor has claimed them, have to either be rescinded by the governor himself, or the state legislature has to go back in session and affirmatively vote to end those powers. They need to change that and say that after, you know, 30 days, then it ends unless the legislature decides that there is right. an ongoing emergency.
Isn't that the way it is in most states?
Not really. I mean,
really?
There some states, but the failure of legislatures to actually get in session and to have these types of actions. I mean, a lot of these states, you know, including my former home state of Colorado, the legislature did nothing. And so the governor was just able to kind of renew this emergency order without really any intervention by the legislature, who are truly the representatives of the people.
Yeah, and that's the point I wanted to kind of emphasize, is our country seems to be, all the way from D.C. to state capitals, our country seems to be drifting further and further away from the founders' vision of a legislature being the most important part of government. Now, you know, there are balances, checks and balances, but we seem to be drifting to the executive branch's power being supreme and unchecked by the legislature, whether because of intimidation, fear of the media, or just cowardice. I don't know. Why are we drifting this way?
Yeah, and I think to allude back to Justice Gorsuch's words, even conservatives can occasionally fall into this trap that we want action and any action, and instead of recognizing that the process is supposed to be slow and we should be seeking, in most instances, a legislative remedy, not just an executive declaration for things even that we want, right? And
right.
so we should be champions of the process instead of – and I really blame in large measure this kind of rapid-paced news cycle that people expect really quick remedies and quick actions instead of saying, you know, hey, we need to wait for the legislative process, and we need to not look at, you know, the one person who's out on Fox News as the sole arbiter of what is good for this country and taking that type of action. So really it boils down back to civic education and understanding why our founders separated and limited powers.
Well, also, to that point, there are some in the Democratic Party now who are saying that President Biden has unilateral authority to raise the debt ceiling.
Right. Which is constitutionally absurd, and
yeah.
I
yes.
have seen that.
But have you seen
yes,
this?
Because I have, and Congress Congress holds the purse strings, and in fact, that's one of the big things that Speaker McCarthy is talking about and suggesting as a way that Congress can and other members of Congress to limit some of this weaponization of government, like, for example, defunding the FBI or portions that are out of control. This is a really big issue, and so for Joe Biden to even suggest this really suggests either he's totally unaware, or his team that's tweeting for him is totally unaware, or they just don't care and they're ignoring the Constitution.
I think you just bingoed on that last comment. I would say this: for congressmen, in this case Democrats, to say that the president doesn't need the Congress to approve spending, all right, or the debt ceiling, which is associated with, is saying we want the we're irrelevant. they're saying about themselves, we're irrelevant. The president doesn't need us to spend money, or I guess to tax and spend, or to raise the debt ceiling. So you know, I guess I didn't think I'd see the day when a congressman would say we're not even necessary to this discussion.
Well, and this is the problem, I think, with the two-party system, that if you have Democrats in Congress and there's now a Democrat president, that they just kind of roll over and say, well, whatever, you know, the leader of the party wants. And instead of looking at this through a lens of, you know, Republican good, Democrat bad, or if you're a Democrat, Democrat good, Republican bad, we have to actually look at each issue and say, and compare and contrast that to what the text of the Constitution actually allows the federal government to do, and why Congress is supposed to be a check and a balance on executive authority, not just part and parcel to whatever the chief executive's agenda is.
All right, Jenna. Well, Jenna Ellis joining us from Orlando. She's at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, the annual gathering there. Ed and I go most of the time, but we didn't go this year. I'm glad Jenna and
because they wanted to avoid me, but, you know.
Well, listen.
Not true.
All right. Take care. Thanks for being on with us, Jenna, and we'll talk
to
you later.
Great to join you.
Okay. Bye-bye. So the NRB is an annual gathering of Christian broadcasters, both radio and TV and other internet from around the world. It's called NRB, but it's really represented from people around the world.
Right.
Who are Christian communicators.
And there's all kinds of great speakers, and you learn what other people are doing. It's kind of a way for Christians in this industry, broadly speaking, can, you know, iron sharpens iron. You get new ideas, and
yep.
It is excellent.
You've been, Ray, right?
I've been. It's been about 20 years, Tim, since I've been, but for 5 or 6 years was there all the time. And, you know, you see everybody. You walk around the NRB. Every broadcaster, everybody on TV, all the publishers are there, the music people are there, and the folks who sell the stuff in the Christian bookstores.
Right.
So it's a little bit of everything. Anybody who's anybody in the Christian broadcasting publishing world, they show up at NRB sooner or later. It's a fun time.
By the way, Franklin Graham, he opened up the National Religious Broadcasters Convention with a speech.
Oh, all right.
But have you seen the picture of him?
He's looking more and more like Billy Graham, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. I've noticed that.
Did you see this picture, Ray?
I haven't seen that particular picture.
Okay, of him at the NRB?
Yeah, well, his hair is...
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
He's let his hair go. And
he's let his hair grow, you mean?
Well, yeah, both okay. Grow and grow.
Are you saying that as a comment, as a compliment?
Look, I'm going to text
or something. What are you saying, Tim?
No, I'm not judging the man. I mean, I don't even have hair, so I can't be
if
judged.
If I find he's it, I'll put
full,
it on
he's
the
got a full head of hair, right? Full
it, head. His hair, I'm looking for, if you just look at images, it's all cut pretty close, but the one you're talking about, I've seen lately, he is looking more and more like his father.
That's what I'm saying.
Billy Graham.
I'm seeing this picture, and I'm just kind of stunned at how much he looked like Billy Graham, his dad.
Yeah.
Right, he does look like his dad, and with the hair out a little bit, he looks a little
Which
more.
Which one of y'all right now wants to do an impression of Billy?
I don't mean this in a disrespectful way because
Billy Graham is just
a man.
No, we love Billy,
but
we
I don't imitate people of that stature. Politicians and movie stars, I will, anyway. Yeah, I'm not going to try to imitate Billy.
You'll
Graham.
Do a Dumb and Dumber scene, won't you?
Yeah, I'm not doing that. You know, it's like
you'll do a Jim Carrey,
touch not God's anointed kind of thing. I just have too much respect. Like, just, you know, like Ray Pritchard. I'm not going to try to imitate Pritchard.
I see. Okay, I see the picture of Franklin.
I just shared it on Facebook.
You did? Okay. I mean, he's looking more and more
like Billy. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had 50-50 odds.
Franklin. That's a compliment.
What age is Franklin now, Ray?
He's about my age, 69, 70. He's up there.
Wow.
Oh,
he is 70, according to the internet.
Okay, all right.
Brother.
He's 70.
Wow. Oh, not that there's anything wrong with that, right?
Not that there's anything wrong.
He's still, he's strong, speaking the gospel truth.
Now, I am proud of Franklin Graham, because on cultural issues, he could have waffled and stayed out of it. But he's neck deep in it. That's a courageous man.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back in two or three minutes here on today's issues. Stay with us.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, Chris, and Ray, and we thank you for listening to American Family Radio. Joining us now is our good friend Dr. Frank Turek from the great state of North Carolina. Good morning, Ray. Good morning, Frank.
Tim, how are you?
Doing great. Good to have you back with us. Hey, you were able to land us an interview on short notice with a high-profile gentleman in your state, didn't you?
Yes, sir. You know, Governor Roy Cooper decided he was going to declare a state of emergency basically to avoid a school choice bill from going forth. And I thought, you know, I bet my friend Mark Robinson, who happens to be the lieutenant governor of North Carolina, would have a thing or two to say about this, because Mark has been he campaigns on protecting the life of the unborn, protecting Second Amendment rights, giving control of children's education back to parents. He stands up for law enforcement. He addresses veterans care. He wants to enact election reform.
Hey, vote for him. I'll vote for him twice.
Right. Well, I was fortunate enough to text Mark, and he said, I'd love to be on. So here he is, the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. Governor, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, sir. What do you have to say about Governor Cooper declaring a state of emergency to avoid a vote on school choice?
You know, this is just another ridiculous stunt by the governor. Just another ridiculous stunt. You know, he had just a week or so ago, he had a ridiculous stunt where he actually promoted the killing of children in the womb on Mother's Day weekend. He doesn't want to promote a culture of life. He wants to promote the killing of children in the womb on Mother's Day weekend. And now he's coming out with this phony state of emergency about our schools. You know, somebody needs to clue this guy in. The real state of emergency in our schools is the fact that we spend half of our state budget on public education, and in many places our children can't read on the grade level. The real state of emergency is the fact that our teachers are being assaulted on a daily basis in our schools. The real state of emergency is that we have a governor who wants to make it so that parents can't be in charge of their children's educational destiny, and he wants to fund systems instead of students. That's the real state of emergency with education in North Carolina.
We're talking to Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson of North Carolina, and Governor Roy Cooper just declared a state of emergency basically to avoid a school choice bill from going forward. Governor, why is it that Democrats are for choice if you want to kill your child, but not for choice if you want to educate your child?
It's simple. Their policies are bad, and their ideas are terrible because they're not based on principles. As I said, they don't want to build a culture of life in this state. And a culture of life in this state says, yes, we want you we want to save the life of your unborn child. Not only do we want to save that life, but once that child is born, we want to give you, the parent, the opportunity to decide your children's destiny. And that includes an education. But if you look, Governor Cooper has been a governor who has taken away choice from top to bottom. He does not want, first off, he's against saving babies in the womb. That's number one. But during COVID, what did he do? He shut down people's businesses. He shut people out of schools. He shut people out of choices, out of church. He does not want to give the people of North Carolina the opportunity to chart their own destiny. He wants to be the king. He wants to be the ruler. And that includes deciding where your children go to school and how they're educated. That's not up to him. That's up to the parents. We're not co-parents with the state or with the governor. We're parents to our children, and we should be the ones to decide their educational future, and that's what we want in this state.
We're talking Dr. Frank Turek is on with us, as he is most Tuesdays, from North Carolina. He was able to get on the phone with us. Also, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson of North Carolina, and we were talking about the Democrat governor there is resisting school choice, and he's all – But now, this is Tim Wildman, Lieutenant Governor. Thanks for being on with us. I want to ask you a question. It made the news last week, I think, that the legislature in North Carolina was able to override the veto on Cooper on the pro-life issue and able to get a 12-week 12-week pro-life. I'd like to get more, but that's what it is right now, able to get that through the legislature and override the veto. Any chance that the legislature will be able to override the governor on the school choice matter?
I believe so. There are too many people in this state that are dissatisfied with the current state of public education, and they want to make changes for their children. And they see that the competition will drive excellence. And these parents, they want to be able to put their children in schools that are going to give them the tools that are going to help them be successful. And folks across the board, Republican and Democrat alike, want to have educational freedom. They want to have that choice. They want to be able to decide their children's educational destiny. So, yes, I believe we're going to be able to override his veto, and I believe we're going to stick it to him once again, and it's going to be a good day when we do.
Well, listen, Lieutenant Governor, thanks for being on with us on AFR on such short notice. Hey, can we have you back on again at a future time so we can – because I'd like to know a little bit more about your story. Can we schedule that sometime?
Absolutely. Just give me a call and we'll set it up.
Okay. So, and we have several radio stations across the Tar Heel State. So, anyway, thank you, Lieutenant Governor Robinson. Appreciate it very much.
You got it. Thank you, sir. Okay. We appreciate y'all.
God bless. Thanks.
Maybe we'll have him on as governor of North Carolina sometime.
Someday. We have aired clips of him from some of his speeches that he has done.
You know, right. Frank, you still with us, Frank?
Yeah, I'm here.
You know what's very interesting? I'm looking at a tweet from someone named Corey DeAngelis, who describes himself as a school choice evangelist. He says about North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper. Again, we're discussing the governor of the Tar Heel State declaring a state of emergency to fight against school choice. This DeAngelis fella, he says that Roy Cooper sends his own kid to a private school.
Of course. Of course.
How many times have we seen that where these Democrats who do not want to allow people, parents, to have the option to send their kids to whatever school they want to send them to, taking their tax dollars for education and being able to send their kids – these politicians all send their kids to private schools.
The Obamas did it.
They don't send their kids to the local public school where they can be beat up and have to face drugs and gangs and other teachers being assaulted
in the
hallways.
They don't want to give others the same opportunity.
Yes. Frank,
Your voice is rising, Ed.
I know.
Tire pitched.
It's discouraging Ed Day, and this is bad for me to – What is up with this hypocrisy?
And how did a flaming liberal? How did a flame? Can I call him a flaming?
Yeah, sure.
How did a flaming liberal get elected governor
of a state with a super
North Carolina?
Majority.
Yeah, super majority. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, he is what we would say, not in the moral sense, but in the practical sense, a good politician. Roy Cooper is. I mean, he knows how to work people. Okay. And he didn't win by a lot, and who knows what kind of shenanigans went on. But he's term limited out, gentlemen. He can't run again. And so Mark Robinson is one of the Republicans who is trying to run against him. There's still a primary to go on, but Mark is probably he's in the lead right now. He is the current lieutenant governor. And as you can see, if any of your listeners go online, any of our listeners go online and just type in Mark Robinson and see any of his speeches – the man is a force of nature, okay? He doesn't pull punches from anything. He's not afraid of anything. He just speaks what he thinks is the truth, and it's very refreshing. So he's a guy that you just need to keep your eye on.
Is he a pastor?
No, he's not a pastor. He was a businessman, and back in 2018, what happened was there was some kind of shooting in Greensboro, North Carolina, and the city council wanted to somehow restrict guns. And as I remember it, he went as just a businessman and went to the city council and gave this impassioned talk, basically saying, "Why is it when somebody misuses their rights, you try and take away my rights?" right? Mm. And this thing has been viewed by more than 20 million people, and he basically got drafted to run for lieutenant governor.
Well, he's an Army veteran.
He is.
You can tell he loves our country and loves our freedoms. And anyway. All right, Frank, what do you got coming up this weekend on your show?
Well, on the show this week, we're doing an encore interview that I did a number of years ago with Tim Keller. Many of you may know that Tim Keller passed on just a few days ago. We had a great interview with him back at the end of 2016 on his book, Making Sense of God. Very interesting interview. So that's we're going to air that this weekend on the American Family Radio Network at 9 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Eastern.
That was from 2016?
Yeah, yeah, but it's an evergreen interview. We weren't talking current events. We were talking about why are so many people uninterested in Christianity? How do you get them interested? You know, what are the real idols in their lives?
Yeah, what church was it he was at in New York?
Well,
Redeemer Presbyterian?
Yeah, Redeemer. He retired in 2017 as the pastor. So, and then what they decided to do was basically break the church up because he said, look, we're not reaching enough people in Manhattan having these singular locations. We got to spread ourselves around. And his goal was to get the number of people attending church in Manhattan to go from 5% to 15%.
What was his signature book?
Probably there's two. Reason for God, The Reason for God, which is a kind of an apologetics book, and the other one, which you could give to anyone to explain Christianity, is something called The Prodigal God. The Prodigal God. It's really about the prodigal son's parable.
Right.
And it explains grace so clearly that it's a great book to give anyone who is just maybe interested in knowing the truth, what Christianity is really all about.
You know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I heard a sermon. Someone gave me a list of 12 sermons that he had done. This is probably back 12 years ago, 15 years ago. And one of them was on the sermon he did on the prodigal sons, really the two lost sons. Right. And that that changed my life. I do have The Prodigal God as a book, and it's based, I guess, on that sermon. Because he was very, very famous for that particular sermon, and it was life-changing for me. I understand
in what way?
Well, he was discussing.
We're talking about Timothy Keller, by the way.
Tim Keller, who passed away. His sermon looked at both sons. You know, a lot of times we focus on the younger son because he went off and did and broke the laws of God and, you know, lived a prodigal life. That's why the parable is usually called the prodigal son. But the older brother was also lost.
He was
lost in his goodness.
And
in fact, the parable, Jesus told the parable, directing it towards the Pharisees. The purpose of the parable, all the sinners that Jesus encountered for the most part, you know, the prostitutes, the tax collectors, the drunkards, they already knew they were sinners. Jesus told this parable to the Pharisees because you only enter heaven by accepting the invitation to the feast. And the older brother, it's a cliffhanger. At the end of the parable, you don't know whether or not the older brother was going to go into the feast. In other words, to enter by grace and receiving the invitation. So I never forgot. He said the younger brother was lost because of his sinfulness, but came back, availing himself of the grace and love and mercy of the Father. But the older brother was lost because of his goodness. And I never forgot that, because we're not saved by works.
Yeah, and why is it
Frank, you go ahead, and then Ray, I want you to comment on this.
No, I was going to say, why is it a cliffhanger? Because if you look at the context of the prodigal son's parable, the reason he's telling these parables, Jesus is because the Pharisees were grumbling that he is hanging out with sinners. And so, look, in every parable, there's at least two characters. There's you and God. And there's always sometimes a third character. And in this parable, there is a third character. And who does the third character represent? The older brother represents the Pharisees, who have their arms crossed going, I've been with you all this time, Father. and your younger son goes out and squanders his wealth on prostitutes, and you slay the fatted calf for him? What about me? You owe me. I've been with you the whole time. And so in this parable, the older brother represents the Pharisees, who are standing there with their arms crossed going, you're hanging out with sinners. So he's basically, Jesus is basically saying to the Pharisees to whom this parable is directed, are you going to be like the older brother? Are you going to think you made it on your own because you're better than your younger brother? No, you need to accept the grace that I provide. Are you going to accept it? And he doesn't answer because the Pharisees haven't made their decision.
Right.
Ray, go ahead.
About Tim Keller, two things stand out. Ed, what you said, Frank, what you said, both so powerful. Just let me add my two cents here. I'm always deeply moved when I think about the fact he pastored in Hopewell, Virginia, and then he went on to the faculty of Westminster Theological Seminary in Philadelphia. He was there from 84 to 89, and he had a real burden in the PCA, Presbyterian Church in America, starting churches all over the country. And Tim Keller told his seminary classes, we need somebody to go to New York City and start a church in New York City. And no one would do it because that's a fool's errand, right? Going to New York City. And to quote my friend Dan Darling, when no one else would go, Tim Keller raised his own hand and said, okay, I'll go. And took his wife, Kathy, and their kids and drove to Manhattan, maybe arguably the hardest place in the hardest city on the earth. And God used him to change the spiritual tone of New York City. Yeah. So God blessed Tim Keller. And as everybody else has said, he had the gift of seeing the gospel. He found Jesus everywhere in the Bible.
Yeah.
He'd preach the Old Testament and make a beeline for the cross. And a gifted, gifted preacher who knew how to speak the gospel to our generation. We lost a great deal when he went home to heaven.
Amen. Yeah, but thankfully, Ray, all of his sermons are recorded. I mean, there's hundreds of sermons, and of course his books are still with us. And as you know, there's always a ripple effect. His podcast right now is number one in the religion and spirituality category.
Wow.
How many people now are now discovering this guy
because
they heard about he died, and now they're actually maybe getting saved and sanctified because of it.
Amen.
And by the way, it's interesting that Tim said that the only time he and his wife Kathy ever were at loggerheads over a decision and he had to make the call was to go to New York.
Really?
Yeah. He said... she didn't want to go. And that's the only time I had to say, look, I'm going to have to break the tie. We're going.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about the late Timothy Keller, who passed away last week.
Yes, I do want to mention that our very own Steve Jordahl did a nice obit last week on Dr. Keller's passing. I have shared that on our Facebook page and in the comments of this show, so check that out.
And, folks, I just want to encourage you, listen, there's all sorts of streams in the Christian community. You don't have to necessarily agree with everything that Tim Keller has preached, but please don't toss out all the good that this man preached.
Sure.
He was as Ray said, just a gifted, and Frank, just a gifted, gifted communicator.
Yeah.
He was,
all right,
yeah.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it, brother.
God bless you guys. See you.
Take care. Dr. Frank Turek joining us from North Carolina. And we were talking about, he's got an interview coming up that he did in 2016. He's going to air this weekend on Cross Examined here on AFR at 9:00 Central Time on Saturday and 4:00 Central Time on Sunday on American Family Radio. Frank will play that interview he did with Timothy Keller back in 2016. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. What was the name of that book that you said was a life changer?
Well, it was the sermon. The sermon. Book was based, I think, on that sermon, The Prodigal God.
Okay. All right, Chris, next story.
Well, this is playing out right now, and I've shared
right now,
this
Chris?
As well. Yes, happening right now.
Okay.
There is a hearing in the House where Republicans are listening to people talk about Biden administration's immigration and border policies. And boy, is that a loaded topic, right? But a lot of people are upset with what's going on down on the southern border specifically because President Biden hasn't done very much, if anything, about it. And At the same time that this is going on, we have mayors in big cities, including New York City Mayor Eric Adams, saying we can't take these people. Mayor Adams is now to the point, guys, where he's saying that every town and city in America needs to take on these migrants. It's not just our responsibility. And he also blamed Republicans for all the problems, even though Joe Biden's been in office now for 2.5 years. Clip two.
We have 108,000 cities, villages, towns. If everyone takes a small portion of the move throughout the entire country, it is not a burden on one city. Republicans, as we know, have blocked all attempts at fixing our broken immigration system, intentionally causing chaos and dysfunction.
I don't know what.
Go ahead.
I don't
say
what,
it.
Huh?
That's a lie.
It is.
That is just a lie. The Democratic Party wants the system broken so that they can force the Republican Party to grant citizenship to all the people who are here illegally. I just explained
that's their idea of comprehensive immigration
and
reform.
Compromise. Yeah. A compromise between the parties, bipartisan, right. Fixing our broken system.
No.
Well, they broke it so that people would flood into this country, overwhelm the system, and then say, we got to do something. So let's make them all citizens.
Right there. Okay, the mayor of New York. Listen, I have zero sympathy for him or for New Yorkers.
Right.
They proclaimed they were a sanctuary city.
Mm-hmm.
They virtue signaled for years while Texas and Arizona and a lot of and the southern states in particular dealt with the illegal immigration problem. And as long as it didn't touch New York, they were proudly a sanctuary city.
Yes.
Come here.
Right.
You know. Well, now they're coming there. Okay? And now he's saying, we can't take it anymore. Really? Why don't you ask the people in Texas?
Right.
How they feel about that.
Mm-hmm.
You get a few hundred, you get a few thousand. They've had a few million.
Right.
Okay? Come across the border there in Texas and in Arizona in particular. And Chicago, same thing. They're having the illegal immigrants, you know, they call them undocumented. They're here illegally, all right? So that doesn't demean their humanity,
right?
In my mind,
right.
It just says they're here illegally, and they've come into our country, and they're sleeping in police stations and gymnasiums,
and hotels
in New York and Chicago, and they're trying to figure out what to do with them, and there are more coming. They're more on their way, and Chicago, same thing, Ray, sanctuary city. And so I have no sympathy for
these mayors, they're all for this sanctuary city stuff as long as they don't actually have to provide sanctuary for anybody.
Right. Bingo.
The thing that always stands out to me when you hear these comments from Democrats saying it's the Republicans' fault when it comes to the border, it's as if the Republicans have always controlled government, which is clearly not the case. I mean, when I was a little kid, back in the 80s, correct me if I'm wrong, but Congress was controlled by the Democrats during the Reagan administration. It wasn't until the mid to late 90s that the Republicans controlled Congress, but you still had Bill Clinton.
Was the first time the Republicans took the House of Representatives,
yes.
I don't know, since like the 40s or 30s.
Right, and then you have the supermajority that Democrats had on the legislature as well as the White House during the Obama years. So it's not just the Republicans' fault here. It's a lie to say it is.
Well, I will say the current situation, that is, since Biden took over, is exclusively the fault of the Democrats and Biden for the reasons Ed mentioned. They want these millions of people. Their desire is to flood our country with millions more people till the system breaks down and there's no border at all. And it's out of control, and then you have social welfare programs that you got to pay for. Because Biden said he wants to pay for medical care for everybody who comes here illegally. Remember all the Democrats raised their hand?
Right, yeah.
So it's a big presidential election coming up next year. And the American voter is going to have to decide, do we want borders or not?
Right.
Because the Democrats don't want borders. They say, well, this is a broken system, as you said, Ed. Ray, Chris, They keep saying it's a broken system, that the Republicans – that's what Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House spokesperson, keeps saying. Trump broke the system, and we're left with the mess. No, that's a lie. Actually, President Trump had it under control, okay?
Right.
He had it under control. It's Biden who said, I want to get rid of everything Trump did and let them all in.
Right.
And that's what's happened. And they're all claiming asylum. All these folks are claiming asylum. Asylum is for people who are being persecuted for political reasons.
Right.
Okay. It's a very narrow definition.
Right.
And so also you're supposed to apply for asylum at the first country you come to. So for example, if you're going to claim you're persecuted in Nicaragua, then you're supposed to claim asylum in Mexico.
Right.
All right. But the asylum application is being abused by millions of people. They're all claiming asylum. And then Biden says, okay, you come back in 10 years for your hearing.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's just complete gaslighting by the Biden administration and the Democrats. They want what's happening
you
now.
You can do that when you have a media that won't hold you to it.
Yes. Now, I will say this. The Democrat mayors in these big cities, that's the reason that they're having a hard time, because they know it's Biden's fault, but they don't want to call him out for it.
Right.
Right? All right. We'll be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.